important, absolutely. But even more important, we need leaders in buildings. We need our leaders to be in the buildings. We need to be consistent. We need to continuously talk, and we need to have a plan. The time for a plan really has already passed and when we should have started. But we're talking, we have a national, we have a state, we have a local. There's so much power in that, but that power, I feel like, is the opposite of kinetic. Right now it's static. That power is kind of static, maybe waiting for direction. I don't feel like right now is the time to wait for a direction. Now is the time to like be big and be bold and maybe feel a little bit scared about what we're doing. And if we're not a little bit scared about what we're doing, and also hopeful, because we're talking to other people who are helping us feel brave, and we're coming up with plans and demanding things, I think that's what should be going on right now.
All right. Well, that's actually kind of a nice closing out for us, Julia. We didn't even get a chance to talk about the attacks from our own governor, but we'll save that for another episode. So thank you, Julia.
Please bring me
Ryan.
Back on for that episode.
Well, yeah, me too.
Okay. Thank you, both of you, for joining us on KBOO. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. This is Stephen Siegel. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 o'clock to catch another Labor Radio show.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Hey, KBOO listeners. Willamette Week is seeking nominations for their annual Best of Portland Readers Poll, and we need your help to show Portland what KBOO means to this community. From now through noon on Friday, April 25th, you can nominate us for Best Radio Station. Just head to kboo.fm and click the Best of Portland banner to submit your nomination. Thank you for supporting your favorite community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO, every third Saturday at 10 p.m. for Query. Dive into the spectrum of queer music as we explore artists across time and genre.
It's on my mind every hour of every day.
That's Query, every third Saturday at 10 p.m.
The things we can do, oh, it takes my breath away.
Here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And I lose control.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.
Good evening, you're listening to Prison Pipeline. We're here tonight with Casey Alexander. We're going to be talking about some of Casey's experiences in the OSP and at McLaren and with EOC, and just kind of hear Casey's unique perspective as an AIC, a former AIC, about the situation here in Oregon with ODOC. So, Casey, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thanks. But first of all, congratulations on being out.
Oh, thank you.
I think your girlfriend told me you've been out about 5 months.
Yeah, October.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, how does it feel to be out?
At first, it was like surreal. I didn't feel like it was actually happening. I was expecting them to come and get me. Like, oh, we made it.
Right.
So after getting released, it was more of a adjustment period. I have to realize that, oh, I'm okay. I could do what I need to do and not have to worry about anything else.
Yeah. Well, how are you doing? How's your transition been, you know, back into the world?
I love it. At first, the transition was overwhelming, and I get what guys say that it's hard, right? But it was more overwhelming with anxiety and the unknown, what to not expect after spending 15 years in an environment that people shouldn't be in, right, for that long. I had to learn how and just know that, oh, it's okay for me to walk down the street. It's okay for me to say hi to somebody. I had to get in my head that nobody knows my past. And I was thinking that every time somebody looked at me, I'm like, oh, they know. They know I was in prison. Right? And then getting to know your PO is just part of it. And it was more of a adjustment on our part because I had to let him see me for me, right? And to be able to get those privileges that I do have now. And so the adjustment period is definitely different. You know, you don't realize that you become institutionalized. You know you do. In your mind, you're like, yeah, I know I'm becoming institutionalized, but you really don't or understand how severe it is until they go, okay, bye, see you. And then you're gone. And then you're like, oh, well, I don't know what to do because I had a routine set for years. Now I have to create a new one. It's just a matter of applying what you learn for the better to your daily life. Right? Yeah. You're out there once and you're going to be out there again. Why can't you still live your life how you're supposed to?
Right, right, yeah. So does your PO know that you're doing the show today?
He does not, no.
Oh, okay. All right, never mind.
I'll see him tomorrow, and he'll be like, cool, when does it come out so I can listen to it? Shout out to Josh.
Yeah. You get along pretty good with your PO?
Oh, yeah, it's great. I think I'm one of his easiest guys. So I get along pretty well because I do what I'm supposed to do, you know, and I have open communication with him. And if he asks anything, I go, yep. And then I don't lie to him. I don't try to fib anything. I just tell him how it is. And I figure that's how he appreciates it because he's a straightforward person too.
Yep. Right.
And so your relationship with the POs don't set your reentry. You know, right. You could start it off bad and your entry could be bad, or you could start it off good and then reentry is a lot easier and becomes better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. How long are you on parole for?
I got 11 years, 8 months on parole. I could be off in 5.
Okay, wow. At least you're on parole on the outside. That's the best place to be, right?
Yeah, and it's so weird. I tell people all the time, I was like, my worst day outside of the free prison is still better than my best day in prison.
Right, right, yeah.
And so you did, people that don't go to prison don't understand that.
So let's talk about that. I know that you'd like to share your perspective on some things that maybe people don't understand or don't know, and there's things about it that could be better. I know there's things you'd like to talk about. So is there anything you'd like to share about your experiences?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things to share, like the goods and the bads, right? But people don't understand or know that happened while you're in prison, right? The goods is OYA, Oregon Youth Authority at McLaren. When I was there, they were about rehabilitation, getting you rehabilitated, educating you, developing you into the human being you're supposed to be, that should have been before your incarceration, and set you up for success upon release. Okay, so they do things, they do group, they do treatment, everything you could think of, education, you could get degrees, you could get licenses and fields. They really focus on developing you. which was good because doing 8 years in there, helping kids develop after I was, I got developed the person I was, it was my way to give back. And that allowed me to watch these younger guys, the next generation that it was going to be there after I left, develop into the young men that society failed to help develop. Right? And a lot of people don't understand, well, why are these kids this way? Well, not only did their family fail them, but society failed them. Right? Society turned a blind eye to what there was going on in the family to cause this kid to commit a crime. And so people don't look at it that way. They just hear, oh, the kid committed a crime. Well, he's don't be one of those guys, which isn't true at all. I've seen so many people rehabilitate that could be out next to you today and you wouldn't even know. You couldn't tell. Just by the way they act and handle themselves and everything, you'd never even know unless they told you. When I went up to DOC, that's when my eyes really started opening about how wrong DOC or DOC is and everything they do. DOC doesn't have a mentality of let's rehabilitate this individual. They have a mentality of, well, they're here, let's give them a bunk and some food and let them be on their way. It's a warehouse. You're not correcting anything in there. You're just putting us in there as a warehouse. And so while I was in there, I've already done 8.5 years at McLaren to develop myself and my character. So when I went there, I already knew who I was. I already knew my personality. I already knew how I am and things like that. So I wasn't influenced negatively from the stuff that goes on in there. And I let people see my character for itself. I didn't have to try to explain myself to people. I let my character shine itself. And people were drawn to that because not many people come in with that type of character. Right. Not many people come in with the experience or the understanding or the treatment or the education that I was able to get, you know. And so DOC, yeah, to the public eye, DOC does offer vocational training. They do offer some education. Right? They do offer treatment for certain people. Right? All this is for certain people only, right? So they say that, oh, we offer vocational training opportunities to everybody. No, that's not true at all. Depending on your crime, you won't be able to do anything. You have to just sit there. You can't do groups. You can't do vocational training. You can't do anything. It's because the staff are also involved with what we call the prison politics, right? So if you're in it for a certain crime, you can't do things that then the other people with a different crime can, right? And so there's staff are involved with all that stuff too. And so the people that really want to change and really want to educate themselves are being told no. They're being told no because either their crime is the wrong type or they have this ACR score, which is a score that is the risk for reoffending, right? They say, oh, your ACR score is too low, right? You have a 2% chance of reoffending and coming back to prison. You need at least a 25% chance to be able to do this group, right? And then or they either have too little time or they have too long of time, right? And so it's a certain amount of certain people that do it. And normally it's the people that are coming in and out of prison multiple times that get those opportunities to do these groups and do this stuff. And it's me witnessing this, I always thought, that's kind of a waste. You're telling these guys that want to change, that are wanting to do these groups in the educational programs, that want to better themselves to make sure they don't come back, you tell them no. But the guys that have been back 3, 4, 5 times, going in and out of the hole multiple times, as soon as they ask, you say yes. Okay. So if in prison, guys will say, there's no difference between incentive levels. So you have level 1, 2, and 3. the better you do, the higher level you get, the more privileges you're supposed to get. But the better you do, the less opportunity that you get to do programming because of focusing on those guys that don't do good, because it's their way to say, oh, look, we're trying. Give us grant money and funding for this program because these guys are this repeat guys that they know, even if they do this and get out, they're coming back. We can just put them right back in there again and keep getting money saying that they're doing the new program. If we put this guy in there that we know ain't gonna come back to do this program, well, we're missing out on a paycheck the second time around. And it's sad because these guys are sitting there wanting to do things, wanting to better themselves, and they can't. They're being told no. And it comes into a corrupt thing. I remember I was between jobs at EOCI in Pendleton. And so I was in the kitchen. I was kind of being nosy about the staff. You know, you kind of do that. You hear what's going on. Because there was a couple of lieutenants in there, and then there was the assistant superintendent that was in there. And in the kitchen, there's this board that shows how many AICs are on every, even in the hole. Now, they say that there is no hole. There's no such thing as segregation. It is a special housing, right, where they do programs and stuff, help them understand what they did wrong. That's not even true. It's a hole. You get stuck inside of yourself 24 hours a day, a week, until you get out of the hole. You come out to shower, your food and everything's brought to back to you. 4 minutes of wreck, that's about it. And it's a hole. That's just what it is. You're isolated, and it's so bad for your mental health that these guys don't, once they get out after 6 months or 60 days or anything like that, they don't know how to cope. Because it was just isolated, everything's overstimulating, so they tend to go back in there. Well, when I was in the kitchen that day with the captains and lieutenants and the assistant superintendent, he was also the operation manager of the facility, there was one person that was in the hole. One person. Out of 1,700 people. One individual was in the hole. And the assistant superintendent, and I'll quote his words, said, "This number needs to be full by tomorrow morning." So that night, all the units got raided. Everybody got stripped. All the cells got tossed. Dorms and all that stuff got tossed. The next morning when I went into work, that hole was filled up. And it's because...
How many people is that?
Depending on the hole that you're in. Some prisons have a hole that holds almost 200 people. Some prisons have a hole that holds only 60 people. At EOCI, it filled up over 100 people.
We're talking with Casey Alexander. This is Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. And Casey's talking about some of the realities of the Oregon Department of Corrections that people maybe don't know about. Casey is an AIC who did about 15 years. Is it okay if I talk about your time, Casey?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Okay, yeah. Casey did about 15 years, about half of that at McLaren Youth, and then half of that at the adult prisons. Casey, thank you. Please continue your story.
Yeah. So what I was saying is about the whole is they're trying to keep it filled. And about a year later, I ended up going to another facility after I witnessed that. I went from EOCI to OAC. When I was there, I asked one of the staff members, I won't mention the staff member's name, I asked her, why do they try to fill up the hole all the time? And she said, it's under a thing in DOC that is considered programming, and they get funding for special programming. So if they don't have people in there to do special programming, then they lose the funding.
And so there's a couple of things. So Casey, there's a couple of things I just want to make sure we go over on the show so people kind of know what you're talking about. I hadn't quite gone to them earlier, but So when you say EOCI, you're talking about the Eastern Oregon Correctional Institute. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Is that in Snake River?
That's in Pendleton, Oregon.
Oh, EOCI is in Pendleton. Okay.
And then OSCI is the Oregon State Correctional Institution, which is in Salem off of Highway 22.
Right. OSCI down in Salem. That's the men's prison. A lot of people know about that one. And then earlier in the show, we were talking about McLaren Youth Authority, which is the prison for people who are incarcerated who are under the age of 25. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, you go there, you have to be under the age of 18 to be able to go there, but you can stay until you're 25. So 15, 16, and 17-year-olds get arrested and sentenced under Measure 11. They go to Oregon Youth Authority, which a lot of people know as McLaren, but there's also other facilities, just like ODOC, there's other facilities besides the state penitentiary. McLaren is just the biggest facility in the world, most known for the youth authority. And you stay there until you're 25. Now, you get a lot of guys.
And how old were you and Ewan in, Casey?
I was 16.
You're 16, yeah, wow. That's barely old enough to drive.
I actually had my driver's license for 6 months.
Yeah.
Before I got arrested, yeah. It was one of those things that was an eye-opener as a kid, because the only thing you heard about McLaren was bad things, like, oh, kid killers go there, which the kids have killed people. So have adults. Kids have committed the crimes that adults have committed. Okay. But it's not like what people think. Oh, okay, everybody in there's bad. No, there's a lot of guys in there that do the whole time at McLaren. You can get sentenced as an adult and only do 6.5 years. And so if you're going at 16, you're getting out before you're 25 and you'll have to experience ODOC. Now, the long-term guys, we call them DOC guys, are the guys that were sentenced as an adult. The long-term guys were the guys that had to go up to ODOC after they were done with Oregon Youth Authority. While I was at OSP, I did my last year at OSP. And while I was at OSP, I saw a lot more things than I thought I would see. These things is what goes on. Is I had a good mentor of mine. I still talk to him today. He said that there's three types of CEOs, right? And he did a little bit of time at OSP back in the early 90s, and then he rehabilitated just for a drug offense. And then he became a drug counselor and unit coordinator, life coordinator, and then a unit manager in OYA. And he works with OYA for almost 30 years as a mentor and a staff and all this stuff. And he retired. He told me, I'll experience in my time three types of CEOs, correctional officers. First type is the one that wants to help you rehabilitate and make sure you do good and never come back to prison. That's the first type. He said that's about 10% of the CEOs that you're dealing with, 10%. And he said those CEOs are the ones that will never last, are always the ones to be fired or let go or anything like that. Those are the ones that do not last. Because it's the CEO that is just there for a paycheck. They don't care either way if you rehabilitate yourself or you don't. They're just there for their 8 hours. They don't want nothing to do with you. They don't want to communicate with you. They don't want anything. They just want a paycheck. He said that's about 25% of the CEOs that you'll come across, which is okay, because being an AIC, a CEO that doesn't want anything to do with you means that they ain't going to go out of their way to try to cause problems for you, and you don't have to worry about them. They know how they are. They just want to do their job, what's in the job description, and that's great. Just do what your job is. I don't have to worry about you bullying me. I don't have to worry about you just going out of your way to cause problems. I don't have to worry about that stuff. And you won't see those on face value until you're in there. Then you see these guys 8 hours a day, days a week, and being in the AIC, you are very observant of people and their behaviors. You have to be in while you're in prison. And so you see who they associate with, right? But the guys that they associate with and spend time around, you spend 24/7 with those guys, and you know what they are, what they are doing, what they represent. And so the CEOs that are spending the time with them are the ones that are on the same page as they are. And those are the ones you got to be worried about, of the most corrupt things that goes on, bringing in drugs, contraband, you know, the abuse that goes on. And it does go on every day in there. And there are a few positive things about Department of Corrections. If you have your head on your shoulders and you already know who you are, it makes it where, oh, I don't want no part of this. I don't want to be here again. I'm going to do what I have to do to make sure that I am successful upon release. Right?
That's great.
The other good part is there's a two-part, that's the good part about being incarcerated. You find out who your true character is and what you're truly about. Right? So if you are one of those guys that want to live that criminal life, but being in prison, it's not hard to continue that going. And sadly to say, majority of the guys continue doing that because that's what they are, and they get put in a situation where they could learn even more and more of that lifestyle. All right. And the second thing is you find out who you really are and your true family is. The family that is stuck by your side down and you're encouraging you to do great, to get an education. You have all this time to learn a language, to teach yourself this or this, a trade or whatever it is. You have to find out who the true family is that stick by your side and not run away.
That's great. Go ahead, Casey.
And so it's how you look at it, right? And I had a big problem with it. You know, at one point, I was training helping hand dog, right, at EOCI, Eastern Oregon Institution in Pendleton. I was training helping hand dogs for people with disabilities. And a lot of staff wanted to get rid of that program because they don't think that we should have that kind of privilege, because if you're in that program, you get so much more privileges than anybody else.
Is that the thing with the dogs?
Yeah. So it's work with day lab birds of living assistant dogs. Because we train them to help be the helping hand to help people with disabilities that are paralyzed, that have a blind or whatever their disability qualify for it.
Right. So you help to train the dogs. They're like guide dogs and companion dogs for people with disabilities. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember,
I mean, you're putting yourself in a vulnerable position when you do that, because if you're lying and then some, I mean, since you're the one who's in prison, it can come back. You're not working your favor.
Yeah. And so I went in there when they started asking things, I said what was true. No, that doesn't go.
It's always the best policy. Yeah. It's a good policy.
It's sad because they go, oh yeah, we're trying to do all this stuff. But you're not. You're really just making us more stressed. You're making us more angry and anxiety come up.
Yeah.
And it's okay. I'll finish up with this. While I was in prison, the guys in prison, the AICs, felt more comfortable sitting with a guy that cut somebody's head off than being around a CEO.
Right.
Because I know what this guy's capable of, and I could defend myself. The CEO, you don't know what is going on with them at home or anything like that, and they could literally do anything they want to you.
So, Casey, what's next for you, Casey? What does the future look like for Casey?
Well, my future still is open, but I know one thing: I'm gonna still be fighting for juvenile justice. I'll still be fighting for inmate rights and changing the law to benefit people instead of going against them. I plan on going into prisons and giving a talk and telling my story, giving back to the OYA, talking to the younger kids, hoping to motivate them to do good and letting them know that if I could do it with my kind of background, with my kind of upbringing, then they can. The fight never stops. It ain't going to stop for me until I stop breathing. It's one of those things that need to be fought. The more people that help fight it, the better off it is.
Well, we've been talking KBO Community Radio. Casey is an AIC who got out about 5 months ago. So, Casey, again, congratulations on getting out. Thank you. Congratulations on your new life. Thank you. Best wishes to you.
Thank you.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness.